Now we're holding on Pei-Vov Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Continuing on the list of people who are Chayiv Chenek, we said in the mission in the first Mishnah of the Perek, we said one of them is a Zaken Mamre, so now we're going to get into the details of those dinim over the next couple of dafim. So the Gemara says Zaken Mamre Alpi Beis Din. We said that a Zaken, an elder Talmud Chacham, who disobeys what Beis Din says. The Rambam makes a point, by the way, when he brings these halachas, that we're not talking about, for example, as we're going to see in the Gemara over here, actually, we're not talking about Stam a Talmud, we're not talking about Stam an Apikoros or something. We're talking about somebody who himself is a distinguished Talmud Chacham, and he has the ability to decide in the Paskin halachas and to use the Yud Gimel Midas Shatur and Adreshes Behem and so forth. But nevertheless, the Beis Din has decided something a certain way, and he goes against them. So Shenema, the Pasuk says, Ki yipolim imcha davar la'mishpat. The Pasuk says, when there's a matter of judgment that is unknown to you. So then the Pasuk says you have to go up to the Sanhedrin Gdolah, Lamakam Yivchar Hashem, and you ask them, and then you have to follow what they say. And the Pasuk goes on to say that if somebody disobeys them, then he's chayev, misa. So the Mishnah continues, Oshloisha Bate Dinin Hayushan. Now there were three Bate Dinim there in the Beis Mikdash complex alone. There were three Bate Dinim that would deal that that they'd go through before they reach that they'd go through the other Bate Dinim before they reach the Sanhedrin Gdolah. Echad Yoshua Pesachar, these other ones other than the Sanhedrin Gdolah, were of 23. Echad Yoshev al Pesach Harabayis, one of them would sit by the entrance to the Harabayis. The Echad Yoshev al Pesach Azara, the next one would sit by the entrance to the Azara. The Echad Yoshev al Lishkas HaGazis, and then the third one would sit, and then the third one of 71 would sit in the Lishkas HaGazis. So now what would happen is, so you have this Zokin is arguing with the Beis Din in his city about a certain din. So the first thing they would do is they would go to the one by the entrance to the Harabais. And the Zokin tells them, "Kach darashti v'kach doshu chaveray." This is what I daushin, and I hold the halacha as such and such. This is what my colleagues daushin. And then this is what I and then this is so then this is what my colleagues daushin. Kach limadti. This is what I taught in Torah. Kach limnu chaveray. And this is what my chaverim taught. So in other words, be our court of resource. We're appealing to you, basically. Really, by the way, I'm using the word appeal. In halacha, you don't really have the concept of an appeal like you have lahavdil in the goyish court system. That basically, I don't like your verdict, and therefore I'm appealing to a higher level. Here, it's more. If the lower Beis Din doesn't know, like you find by the judges with Moshe, that Yisrael says, anything that you don't know, Moshe himself tells the judges, "Va'davar she'yikshemikem," anything that's too difficult for you, then you bring it to me. So here, this is the kind of thing. So we're saying they couldn't work it out in the Beis Din in their city. They don't have a basis for saying for sure one is right and one is wrong. So they go to this Beis Din by the Pesach Harabayis, and they ask them. They present the argument to them. What do you say? Im shamu, if they heard something from their rebbeim about what the halacha should be, omer lahem or omrim lahem, then they tell them this is the halacha. V'im lav, and if not, boin lahen la'osen shal pesach hazara, then they go to the one by the entrance to the azara. And the Rambam in particular learns that it means that also the means not it means the Zokin himself as well as his local based in it means Boin Lazem means the Zokin and his local based in the ones who had the argument in the first place. The Rambam adds that it means also that based in Al Pesach Harabayis would go together with them to the one Al Pesach Hazara. So Boin Lahen La'osan Shal Pesach Hazara, then they would go to the one by the entrance of the Azara. And again, this is what I daushin, this is what my colleagues daushin, this is what I taught, this is what my chaverim taught. Im shamu omelahem, if they heard something from their rebbeim, then we tell them that this is what we heard, and therefore this is the halacha. V'im lav, and if not, elu ve'elu, boin le beis din agadol shel lishkas hagazis. Then both groups would come to the beis din, to the Beis Din located in the Lushkas HaGozes, and that's the highest Beis Din they can go to. Shemimenu yotze Torah l'cho Yisrael. From there, Torah goes to the entire Jewish people. They're lahavdil, like the Supreme Court. As the pasuk says, from that place which Hashem chose, so that means specifically the Lishkas Hagozis. Rashi points out that we find from other Gemaras the Lishkas Hagozis itself was located half inside the Azara and half outside it. It had to be partially outside the Azara, otherwise the Sanhedrin couldn't sit there, but it had to be partially inside the Azara in order that it should be specifically Hamokam Ashayivchar Hashem. So they would go there. And then they ask them, and then the Sanhedrin tells them one way or the other. Okay, so now that they have a verdict, now this Zaken goes back to his city. If he continues teaching and learning the way that he was learning before, Potter, then he would still be Potter. He's disobeying the Beis Din, that doesn't matter. It's only if he disobeys, as the Mishnah is going to go on to say, as far as giving practical psak halacha. If he tells other people to do like his original psak din chayev, then that's when he'd be chayev as a zokin mamre. We often find in the Gemara, sometimes the Gemara will ask that it says it's brought that an amora, that a tana or an amora said such and such, but it doesn't mean halacha lemaisa, or does it just mean he held in theory it should be this way, but not necessarily in practice. So here we have a similar kind of distinction. If the zokin mamre just goes and continues teaching the way he did before, that's not necessarily that you should do that way, Lamaisa. Halacha Lamaisa, you follow the Sanhedrin Gedola. But in theory, I hold that what they're saying is incorrect and the Jerusha should be such and such. That's fine. Only if he's telling people, practically speaking, do this against what the Sanhedrin said, that's when he'd be Chayav Misa. Chenema, as the pasuk says, Vo'isha Sheyase Bezodin, the man who acts deliberately. So it has to be Yase, that he actually does deliberately. So as we're going to see in the Gemara, it doesn't matter whether he himself actually does it or just tells others. The point is there has to be a Maise involved. So he's Chayav only if he teaches that you should do such and such. And the Mishnah continues, Talmud Jehoda Lassus, if it was a Talmud who gave this kind of instruction, so he's not yet himself a Zokin who's capable of giving Hora Potter, then he would be Potter because he's not a Zok, because the definition of a Zokin, Mamre. If he's a Talmud, then how did it come about in the first place that they even went through this whole process to go to the Beis Din HaGadol? The Aruch HaNer points out you could have a case where they just went in order to check out the din, not because he was actually one of the Dayanim, but then and there were other possibilities as well. Maybe he was temporarily a Dayan or whatever. Anyway, so he'd be Potter because he's not actually a Zokin. Nimtza, so it comes out, Chumroi, the Chumra on him, that he's not supposed to be paskin in Halacha yet at all, Kuloi ends up being a Kula as a result of that Chumra. You have a Kula because now he's able to, now he's Potter from Misa, even though he paskin for people, because he's not supposed to be paskin in the first place, and therefore he's not a Zokin. So the Gemara starts off. So we're going to douse in. We're going to go through, and we're going to douse in the psukim that talk about this. The pasuk describes. In Parshas Shoftim, it goes like this: Ki polim imcha davar labishpat. When you have a matter of judgment that is too obscure for you, that you don't know the answer, bein dom ladom, between blood and blood. We're going to see the Gemara is going to go through phrase by phrase and explain this. Bein din ladin, between one din and another. Bein nega lanega, between one type of nega and another. Divrei rivis b'sharecha, matters of argument among you in your gates, in your local basin, the kamta v'alisa, then you should get up and you should go alamokam ashayivchar Hashem, to the place that Hashem chose. And the pasuk goes on to say that you ask the basin over there, and then you have to follow them. So now let's douse in that pasuk phrase by phrase. An interesting point, by the way, in this regard is when we're saying if he disobeys the Sanhedrin Gdola, then that's when he's in the Zokin Mamre. What about, does that mean that it had to be that every member of the Sanhedrin Gdola said against him, or could it be that even Roiv of them voted against him, even though you have a Miut who agrees with him, then nevertheless he'd still be a Zokin Mamre. So the Machlokas Rishonim about that, the Rambam brings in Pirush HaMishnayos, and the Ramban also holds that it means that it's enough that most of them said against him, and it doesn't matter. He can't say later, well, I'm following the minority, because you can't. You have to follow the majority. On the other hand, the Meiri brings that the Meiri says that there are earlier Rishonim than him who say that it's only if the entire Sanhedrin, every one of the 71, holds against him, but otherwise he wouldn't be a Zokin Mamre. Okay. So anyway, let's go through the pasuk. The pasuk says, "Ki yipole memcha davar." First of all, the pasuk says that a matter is unknown to you. The word yipole is a meloshen pela, which means that it literally means like a wonder, like something which is you don't understand it. But also, the word pela is also related to the word mufla, which means the most distinguished member of the beis din. Mufla shel beis din akosim adaber. So we're talking about somebody who is a distinguished member of the beis din. That's where we learn the last point that we said in the Mishnah, that if he's a Talmud, then he's Potter. Tosfos points out, by the way, sometimes we use the word mufla to mean specifically the Av Beis Din. Here it doesn't mean that. He doesn't have to be the Av Beis Din in order to be a Zaken Mamre, but we just mean, in other words, he has to be capable of paskening halacha on his own, not a Talmud. Okay. Next, the pasuk continues. The pasuk says, ki polim mimcha, it says from you. That word means ze yoyetz. The word mimcha means that, for example, when he's arguing on Beis Din in something regarding Ibur Hashanah. We're going to see as we go through the sugya over here that there are various areas of halacha where if he argues with the Beis Din, he can be considered a zaken mamre. So one of them is if he argues with them on whether this year needs to be a leap year or not. Mimcha zayoyetz, the word mimcha refers to a counselor, an advisor. And then, as the Gemara is going to explain later on, whether we need an Ibur Yor or not, as we talked about at the beginning of the Masechta, the details of how they figure that out, that kind of thing is called Eitza. So therefore, Mimcha Zeyoyet refers to an advisor, somebody who is able to give advice on such a thing, whether it should be a leap year or not. V'cheinu Omer, as we find the word Mimcha used in that connection, Mimcha, from you, this is talking about Nineveh, the capital of Ashur, Yotza, Choshev al Hashem Ra, there came out somebody who thought badly against Hashem, talking about Sancheirev and Rav Sheke and that whole group who were reviling and blaspheming Hashem, Yoyetz B'liyal, who had advice of Rishus. So we see that Mimcha goes together with Yoyetz. So the same thing in our pasuk, ki polem mimcha, means when he argues with them on matters of Ibur Hashanah. Dover, the pasuk continues, mimcha dover lamishba, dover zu halacha, that refers to when he argues with them on something which is halacha lamosh misinai. So that can also make him a zaken mamre. Lamishpat, the pasuk continues, for judgment. Zehadin, that refers to when he argues with them about something that you learn from a gzera shava. Ben Domla, it actually points out later on in the pasuk. It's that later on in the pasuk, it mentions Ben Din Ladin, which refers to Dinim Mominus, and that's why over here halacha must mean halacha l'moshe misinai. That's how the Ran learns. Now there's also that's how Rashi learns. There's a discussion about this. Does it mean what about if he argued with them on something Dirabanan? So one point is when we say halacha means that it has to be halacha l'moshe misinai and not something Dirabanan. On the other hand, the Rambam mentions that he could even be a zaken mamre by arguing about a din Dirabanan. So he would say that halacha would include a din Dirabanan where it leads to something that would be chayav kores b'mezid, as we're going to work out later in the sugya. Lamishpat zadin. When it says lamishpat means a din, it means that he argues with them on something that you learn from a gzera shava. Bein dam ladam, between blood and blood, that means bein dam nida v'dam leda. Bein dam nida, dam leda, dam ziva, means they're arguing about a certain kind of blood, about a bleeding that a woman had at a certain time, whether it makes a nida or whether it makes a woman who gave birth or a zava. In all those cases, she's going to be tamei, but nevertheless, there's going to be differences in them. Does she need to bring a korban? Does she have Yemei Tara, and so forth? It means that in each of those cases, they're arguing about a certain color of blood that came in any of those cases, whether it's Tomei or Tahar, as we're going to learn later on in the sugya. There was Machloikas, for example, about certain shades, whether they're Tomei or Tahar. Next, Bein Din Ladin. When it says between Din and Din, that means Bein Din and Nefoshes, Din and Mominus, Din and Makus. It means when they're arguing about something involving Din and Nefoshes, or Din and Mominus, or something of Malkus, whether the person is Chayev or Potter. Bein Nega La Nega, the pasuk continues, between Nega and Nega, that means Nige Odom, Nige Batim, Nige Begodim, means whether they're arguing about Saras of a person, or houses, or clothes. So they're arguing whether a particular manifestation of tsaras is actually tsaras or not. The pasuk continues, divrei, woods. So that comes to add Elu ha'acharomim v'ha'erchin v'ha'kdeshes, where they're arguing about a cherem, which is a type of hektish, or erchin, which is the type of hektish described in Parshas Bechukosai, where he says erech ploini olai, I pledge the erech of ploini, and you look up in Parshas Bechukosai based on the person's age and gender, and you pay that appropriate amount to the Beis Hamikdash. So again, they could be arguing about a person made a certain declaration in a certain lashon. Is it a valid erech? Is it a valid neder of erech or not? And a hektashis, and in general, where someone is makdish something. The point is, all of those are brought about by speaking. All of those, a person says, I pledge this to the Beis Hamikdash. So therefore, now, therefore, that's called dover. So that's why the pasuk uses the word dover and includes all those things. Next, grivois, the pasuk says argument, zuashkos sota varifas egla. This refers to their arguing about a case of giving a sota to drink, where that's brought about through a riv, through an argument between her and her husband about whether she was mizana or not, and arifas egla, where a person was killed, and bapashtos, it means there was some kind of fight, and then he was killed, so that's included under the word grivois, so that means, again, when the zok, the taras mitzora, and also whether a mitzora is Tohar, and the details of the Tara of a Metzora, that also, Negoyim, Saras, is brought through Lashon Hara, which is an example of Meriva. So in all those cases, in other words, again, the Gemara is explaining over here, the Braise is going through all these different areas of Torah, where in each of those areas they argue about something, and the Zaken Mamre holds one way, and the rest of the Sanhedrin holds the other way, and he paskins differently, then he'll become a Zaken Mamre and he'll be Chayav Misa. And the last thing in the pasuk, bisharecha, in your gates, means zu leket shikho peya. That means if they're arguing about a matter involving leket shikho peya, whether a particular kind of case belongs to the aniyim or whether it belongs to the balabas, and those are called bisharecha because the pasuk says by each one of them that the va'ochlu bisharecha, that they should eat them in your gates, meaning in your cities. Okay, so those are all the areas of Torah in which they could be arguing, and the Zaken will become a Zaken Mamre if he disobeys them and paskins differently. Next, the pasuk says v'kamta, you get up. That means me beistin. That means they have to get up from the beistin where they had the original argument and go to the Sanhedrin. But again, how do we know? Because the point is, in other words, from that we learn that he actually has to be present in the Beis Din, where in other words, we're talking about, Rashi explains, v'kamta, you should stand up, implies that before they were sitting, so it means that they had an actual Beis Din, where they have a certain time, certain hours of the day, when they're supposed to sit there, and people are coming to them for all kinds of cases. So now, that Beis Din has to go, and v'kamta, they have to get up from their place, where they were in session, and go to the Beis Hamikdash. Next, it says va'olisa, you should go up. That means malamet shebeis hamikdash gavoya me'eretz Yisrael. That teaches us the Beis Hamikdash is higher than the rest of Eretz Yisrael in elevation. The Eretz Yisrael gavoya mikol ha'aretz, and by the way, also Eretz Yisrael is higher than all the other countries around it. Now, primarily, we're talking about divrei rivus bisharecha. The pasuk says that you had an argument within your gates, meaning within your cities. So it has to be, in other words, that. It has to be. Primarily, we're talking about that they're going from someplace in Eretz Yisrael to Yerushalayim. Rashi points out right over here in this context, we don't really need to mention the point that Eretz Yisrael is higher than other countries. That's just the Braise is mentioning incidentally. The real focus over here is the point that the Beis Hamikdash is higher. Tosfos points out that we actually find other Gemaras where there are places in Eretz Yisrael, even not so far from Yerushalayim, that are higher in elevation than the Beis Hamikdash. First, Tosfos says it doesn't necessarily mean them more higher than the whole Eretz Yisrael. It just means higher than the areas around Yerushalayim. But then also Tosfos says that maybe what it means is because the walls of the Beis Hamikdash themselves are very tall, so therefore we can speak of Yerushalayim as being much higher than any other place. There's a number of places where the Gemara mentions this point that Eretz Yisrael is higher than all the other countries and that Yerushalayim is higher than all the other places. And the question is, what does that mean exactly? We see geographically there are other places in the world that are much higher in elevation than Eretz Yisrael, and there are places in Eretz Yisrael that are much higher in elevation than Yerushalayim. So there's different points about it. One interesting point the Maharal says about it is that it means it primarily, well, so obviously, so says Maharsha and Maharshal talk about that primarily it means higher in Ruchnius, but in addition, Maharal says in the sense that since the earth is a globe, what it means is place Yerushalayim, place Eretz Yisrael at the top of the globe, and it's higher than all the other ones. Now, obviously, you could do that with any other place in the world, but the point is, since the Gemara mentions in other places, we know already from Psukim that Eretz Yisrael is the primary focus of Hashem's Hashgacha, and he began creating the world from there. We say that the Evan Shesia, which is where Hashem began creating the world from, is in Yerushalayim. So therefore, like that belongs at the top of the globe, and therefore everything else sort of slopes away from there. So even if in elevation above sea level, there may be higher places, but in this terms, we're saying that Eretz Yisrael is really considered to be the highest one of all. That's why the pasuk says Ve'olisa. Next, the pasuk says El Hamokim, to the place. That means Melamed Sham Mokim Godim. That teaches us that it's the place that makes the difference. When he, as we learned in the first parak of our Masechta, that if the Zokin Mamre, if the Zokin finds the members of the Sanhedrin outside the Lushkas HaGozis, and he argues with them, then he wouldn't be a Zokin Mamre even if he actually paskin, even if he actually continued paskining the way he did before, because it has to be Dafka when they're sitting in their place in the Azara of the in the Azara of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so let's start by so 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 now let's go through this so 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 let's let, let's go through a certain detail in this braisa. The Gemara says, I understand the part where we said the Beis Hamikdash is higher than the rest of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, maybe not literally the rest of Eretz Yisrael, but in other words, at least than the surrounding areas. Because we're saying since the pasuk says you should go up, that means wherever they're coming from, they have to go up in order to reach the Hanabais. Ella Eretz Yisrael, where is the Tana of this braisa getting that Eretz Yisrael is higher than all the other countries? You can't say that he's learning it from this pasuk because this pasuk is talking about when someplace else in Eretz Yisrael they have a machlokas in the din and then they come to the Sanhedrin. The answer is dichtiv. There we have a different pasuk. Lochein hini yomim boim ne'um Hashem. Hashem says regarding right now the Jewish people are in Golos are in Golos Bavel. Or this pasuk actually was said by Yirmiyah a few years before the Golos, but he's talking about that there's going to be a Churban, but then there's going to be a Geula. So therefore, behold, days are coming, says Hashem. Lo ye'omer, it won't be said, or lo yomru is how it actually says in the pasuk. Lo yomru oid, chai Hashem. People will no longer say, "I swear, as Hashem lives, Ashehelas bnei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim," that Hashem brought the Jewish people up from Eretz Mitzrayim. Ki im, rather, when Mashiach comes, the Geula from Mitzrayim is going to be second. We're still going to commemorate it, but it's going to be far less important in our minds than the Geula HaMitzvah HaShlema from our current Golos. So instead, people are going to say, Ki Im, they're going to say, Chai Hashem, as Hashem lives, Ashehevi, as Zera Beis Yisrael, that he brought up and that he brought forth the Jewish people, Me'eretz Tzafayna, from the northern land, which is Bavel, or Mikol Ha'arotz, Asher Yedachtim Sham, and from all the other countries where I dispersed them, V'yoshvu Al Admasem, and they will live in their land. So we see Hela, the fact that it says Hela, implies that all the other countries are lower than Eretz Yisrael, and they're going up to Eretz Yisrael when it comes the time of Kibbutz Golias. In this connection, incidentally, the Ramban brings an interesting idea in this point. We know that we count the months beginning from Nisan. Nisan is the first year, is the second, and so forth, in commemoration of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which was in Nisan. He points out, like this, beginning at the time of Golos Bavel. Here we have, it's Purim today, you know, over and over in the Megillah, we have the names of the months that were used in Bavel, and which afterwards became the normal names that we use. We have B'chodesh HaRishon, Hu Chodesh Nisan, B'Shnei Masa Chodesh, Hu Chodesh Adar, and the point that the Gemara elsewhere mentions, that these names came with the Jews from Bavel. So why would we be using Bavli names for the months? Why not continue to use the numbers like we did, like it does in Chumash? So then Ramban explains, this is in fulfillment of this pasuk. Every time we use those names, Nisan, Iyar, etc., all the way down to Adar, it reminds us that we were in Golos Bavel, where they used those names, and Hashem took us out of there, and therefore that fulfills this pasuk that we're mentioning, and we're praising Hashem for taking us out of Golos Bavel. Okay. Fine. So now let's go through the dinim. Let's start going through more of the dinim of Zokin Mamre. Tonarabanan, Zokin Mamre, Enechayev, El Al Dovash's Dorne Kores, Vishigose Chatas, Divir Reb Meir. Reb Meir says that the Zokin Mamre would be Chayev only if the thing that he's arguing with the base din about is involve something where if it was done b'mezid, there would be kores, and if it was done b'shogeg, then there would be chayiv chatas. So meaning, in other words, so exactly that. We know there are 30 or 40 odd mitzvahs for which a person is chayiv kores if he's over on them. So it has to be specifically that they're arguing about something involving one of those things. Or as we're going to see later on, it means that it can be something that leads to one of those things. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. So that's what they're arguing about. So Beis Din says the thing is osur, and he's saying that it's mutter. What about if it's the other way around? By the way, what if they say it's mutter and he's osur? So then you have a machlokas rishonim whether that would make him a zaken mamre. That Rambam holds is going to be a zaken mamre regardless. Anytime he argues with them in such an area of halacha, whether he's makel on their machmer or the other way around. On the other hand, there are rishonim who learn on the other hand Tosfos and the Tosfos and the Ran learn that no, if they're machmer and if they're makel and he's machmer, then he wouldn't be a zaken mamre. Okay, so anyway, Divrei Rav Meir, that's what Rav Meir says. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, when would he be a Zaken Mamre? Al Davar She'ikre Midivrei Torah or Pirushe Midivrei Sofrim. Only when it's something that the main point of that mitzvah is Min HaTorah, but the explanation, the details of it on Midivrei Sofrim were explained by the Chachamim. So an example of that would be tefillin. The Torah tells us to wear tefillin, but it doesn't have any details about it. All the details we learn from Torah Sheba'al Peh. So Rabbi Yehuda holds that's the kind of thing that would make a mezuken mamre. Now, Rishonim also argue. The Tosfos later on learns that Rabbi Yehuda is makel against Rav Meir and says no. Unlike what you're saying, that he's chayev only in the cases where zdonei koras, in the cases where zdonei koras and shemigasei chatas. Rabbi Yehuda would be saying no, none of the above, only tefillin. On the other hand, the Rambam holds that Rabbi Yehuda means anything that's chayev koras and so forth. Plus tefillin. So according to him, in other words, anything, as the Gemara is going to go and work out over here, anything which could lead to something which is donei kodesh and shigasei chatas, plus tefillin, even though tefillin by itself is not in that category. That's how the Rambam learns. Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying that if they argue about tefillin, again, according to Tosfos, that means only tefillin, and according to the Rambam, it means he's saying, he's augmenting what Rav Meir is saying, and saying besides things that involve kodesh and achatas, also tefillin. Reb Shimon, I'm afilu dikduk echon midivrei soifrim. Reb Shimon says, even if he's arguing on one particular detail of divrei soifrim, things that the Chachamim learnt out with the Yud Gomor Midas, Shatur and Adreshas Behem, then nevertheless he'd still be chayiv misa for as a zaken mamre for that. Again, does that also include dinim derabanan? So that's what we were talking about before, where the Ran says that divrei sofrim doesn't mean mitzvahs derabanan. It rather means, like we said before, halacha l'moshe misinai. And then on the other hand, and then the Rashi also before had said halacha l'moshe misinai. On the other hand, the Rambam holds that he could be a zaken mamre even for arguing on a din derabanan, provided that it leads to something involving kores, something that would involve kores v'mezid. And meaning, in other words, the Rambam explains as we're going to go through the sugya over here. We're going to talk about, let's say, for example, that they can be arguing about a matter of dinim mamonis, and it eventually has implications in something that's chayiv kores in the sense they can be arguing. Does this mammon belong to the husband, and therefore he can be mekadesh a woman with it or not? If it's his, then the kiddushin is valid. Then there's kores involved if she's mezana. If not, then not. So therefore, so that would make him a zaken mamre because something that leads to something that's kores. So now that Rambam holds, that would apply even if what they're arguing about originally is a din derabanan. Derabanan, does this money belong to him or not? Because eventually it'll lead to a din d'oraisa, which is can he be mekadesh with this money or not? And again, the Ran and a number of other Rishonim disagree with that point. My time is Rav Meir. Why does Rav Meir say that it has to be something specifically where there's kores involved? So the Gemara says because gomer dover dover, because he learns exeda shava on the word dover from here and from a different place. But here the pasuk says if a matter is obscure for you in judgment, then you have by the power helam dover shot tzibur, where it describes that the Sanhedrin didn't know they made a mistake in a dover. Now, when do they bring the Par Helam Davashot Sibur? When we learn come Elul time, Be'ez Hashem, we're going to learn all about the all about the Par Helam Davashot Sibur and Masechta. We're going to learn about Be'ez Hashem and Masechta Hodias. So it talks about over there when are they chayv? A Par Helam Davashot Sibur is specifically when their mistake is something that involves kodesh v'mezid and achatas b'shogeg. So they mistakenly said that a certain kind of chaylev is mutter. They said that a certain malacha is mutter on Shabbos, so that a certain type of worship of Avodah Zarah is mutter, etc. So malahal and dover shechayv al zdoine kodes v'ashugasei chatas. Over there, the dover has to be something in that category. Afkan, same thing by Zokin Mamre, Reb Meir says, dover shechayv al zdoine kodes v'ashugasei chatas. V'Reb Yehuda, what does Reb Yehuda answer back to that? He says that only that if he's arguing with something that's mainly medivrei Torah and the details about it are medivrei sofrim. Now, according to him, for example, let's say that you wouldn't necessarily. So, according to the other rishonim who say that Rabbi Yehuda, according to the Tosfos who says, for example, who says that Rabbi Yehuda is taking away from what Reb Meir says. So he would say, for example, if the Zokin Mamre is arguing on chaylev or Shabbos or something like that, he wouldn't. Well, let's say chaylev to take an example, he wouldn't necessarily be chayev as a Zokin Mamre because chaylev you don't really need details in Torah Shabbat Peh. It's fairly clear from the Psukim what's also as Chaylev. But according to the Rambam, that it means that he agrees with Rameo, but he also adds Tefillin. So where does he get that from? So he says, the Pasuk says, according to the Torah which they teach you, the Pasuk goes on to say, as far as the Zakin Mamre. That means, so the Meir says there has to be Torah, there has to be something that it said basically in the Torah, and there has to be Yerucha, something which they in turn teach you about how to understand that thing in Torah. So therefore, for example, so again, according to Tosfos, that would mean, he's saying, so not for example, Chelev, the Chachamim don't really need to teach us very much about Chelev. Basically, all the details of it are in the Pasuk. Dam would be another example. What we need, for example, so according to Tosfos, that would mean Tefillin, and according to the Rambam, it means fine. It means all the cases that a mayor said plus Tefillin. Okay, the Reb Shimon, where does Reb Shimon get his opinion that it means even when it's dikduk echad medivrei sofrim, even where it's one detail of what the sofrim, of what the chachamim teach us, where does Reb Shimon get that from? He says, because the pasuk continues, asher yagidu l'cham in amakom ahu, whatever they tell you from that place, from the Sanhedrin Gola, that means afilu kol dehu, even if it's a little tiny thing, and even a dikduk. So that's the machlokas. So the Gemara continues, can you explain me the following braisa, the braisa that we quoted beginning at the bottom of the previous Amud? So we went through all those things where they could be arguing about. Now, according to that mayor, that it has to be that they're arguing about something that involves kores. On the face of it, not all the things in the braisa over there involve kores. We said when they're arguing about, for example, yoyitz, we said means arguing whether this year needs to be an ibur year or not. What does that have to do with kores or not? So he asks Rava, please explain to me this braisa in accordance with the opinion of Rav Meir. If it's only when there's kares, not all the things that we mentioned before involve kares. Amalei Rava, let our papa puk tirgum alei. So Rava tells her papa, go out of the Beis Medrash and go explain it to him, how Rav Meir would understand this braisa. So he starts off like this. Ki pole, again, when he said ki pole, that it's unknown, means b'muflok shebeis and akos medaber, means it has to be a distinguished member of the Beis Din who's actually capable of paskening halacha, like we said before, not a Talmud. Next, when it says mimcha, when it says from you, and we said zeyoyitz, we said refers to someone who knows advice, which means sheyedei la'aba shanim v'lekboya chadoshim, he knows how to determine whether we need an Ibur Yer or whether it's supposed to be Rosh Chodesh or not. Now, what does that have to do with Kores? So first of all, let's understand what kind of machloikas we're talking about. So for example, Kedetnan, we have an example of such a machloikas in Masechta Edius. Hein Heidu, they, which is Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Papias, gave Edus in front of the Chachamim in Yavne, that you're able to make an Ibur Yer throughout the month of Adar. They can declare even on Erev Rosh Chodesh Nissan that we need an extra Adar, and that's valid. Shohu Omim, Ada Purim. Now, until that point, the Chachamim will say you can only do it until Purim. So now, if they're arguing about, and the reason the Gemara mentions elsewhere, the reason is that why the deadline would be Purim. The reason is people know that Purim is 30 days before Pesach, and they're already starting to teach the halachas. So if you're Ma'abo Shonim over there, people are going to get mixed up, and they're going to think that it's not valid, and they're going to end up eating chometz on Pesach. So therefore, so the, but the, but now Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Papias are telling them it's not so. You have until the end of Adar, as we learned earlier in the Masechta on Daf Yud Beis. We talked about that Chizkiyo HaMelech made a mistake in that regard. He thought you could do it even on the 30th of Adar, but we said that no, because the 30th of Adar conceivably could already be Rosh Chodesh Nissan, and then once Nissan comes, it's too late to do that. Anyway, the point is. So that's the point. We're going to explore. So the question, Rav Huna Bar Chinina's question was, what does that have to do with how Rav Meir is saying only if they're arguing on something that involves kares, but whether it's a leap year or not doesn't necessarily involve kares. So now Rav Papa is going to explain to him.
Are you finding it?
It's going to lead to chometz for Pesach. So now, so what you have is, in other words, so the argument is as follows. So de'ilahai gisa. Now, if we go one way, if based in, for example, Paskins, that we could make an ibuyo even after Purim, and he argues them, it comes out kashori chometz for Pesach. It comes out according to him. Now he's disagreeing. So he's saying that. He's saying that you can't after Purim is too late to make an Ibuyar. Therefore, according to him, when they declare an Ibuyar, nothing doing, it's actually still when the next month comes. It's not Adar Sheni, it's Pesach. Therefore, according to him, it comes out that according to his Shitta, it comes out that people are eating chometz on what he considers to be Pesach. And meanwhile, the Sanhedrin Golad said is Tesvav Adar Sheni. So that was the Ilahai Gisa, and if the other way around, Koshori Chometz Pesach. If the other way, they said that you can't make that the Ibuyor that late, and he says that you could, and he makes an Ibuyor Koshori Chometz Pesach. The same thing, he's also causing Chometz to be eaten on Pesach, because according to him, it's Tesvav Adar Sheni, whereas according to the Sanhedrin, it's Tesvav Nissen, and you can't be eating Chometz. So we see, in other words, that that's an example. So it doesn't have to be that the actual din itself is directly something that involves kares, but it can lead to something that does. An interesting point, actually, that Achronim bring up, is we said in the Mishnah it has to be that he paskins differently. So now only the Sanhedrin Gdola can only in the Sanhedrin Gdola can declare a leap year. So what do you mean that he actually paskins differently? The fact is, however, based in deciding what's going to be with Adar Sheni is going to be that's how it is. Atam Afilu Shogin, Atam Afilu Mezidin, etc. So the Torah Chaim gives an answer that let's say the Sanhedrin delegated to him and gave him permission that he can go and declare the Ibuyar for that year. Sometimes you have in the Gemara we had earlier in the Masechta, for example, where sometimes they would delegate it to a group of Chachamim who would go off someplace else and they would determine where they would make the calculations and decide whether it's to be a leap year.
It has to be a group. A group probably wouldn't
ask. Yeah, so right. And so it means that he has a group.
It holds like he holds.
Yeah. And then there's also an explanation. There's an explanation along those lines that we're talking about. They gave specifically not just him and his group, but we're talking about that they gave to a lesser Beistin. So now that lesser Beistin decided, let's say you can make the leap year after Purim, and the Sanhedrin Gdola themselves disagreed. So now and the Zuck and Mamre held that you could do it throughout the entire month. So he holds that lesser Beistin did do what they were supposed to, and therefore yeah. So now again you have an argument which leads to something of Kodesh. So that would be an example of that. So that's what we mean by when they argue on something involving making an ibuyor, then you can have a machlokas that leads to something that's kares. Next, your papa continues, dover. We said in the Braisa before that the word dover is a halacha, means a matter of halacha. Again, according to Rashi and the Ran, it means halacha l'moshim Sinai. According to the Rambam, we need even a halacha d'rabbanon. That would be, for example, hilchas achad osir. For example, the halachas involving the 11th day of Ziva. Now you have like this, minat Torah, there's only certain parts of the month where a woman can be a nida. So you have, if she bleeds during one of those days, then she becomes a nida. And then after that, you have after the 7 days of nida, you have 11 days during which she can only be a zava. It's a halacha l'moshe Sinai that you have to have that there's an 11-day period during which if she bleeds during that time, she becomes a zava. If she has 1 or 2 days bleeding during that time, she's called a shemeres yom keneged yom. She's tomei min haTorah for only 1 day, and then she goes to the mikveh, and that's it. She's mutter to her husband. If she has 3 or more days, then she becomes a zava gdola. Now she needs 7 clean days. The halacha, as we keep them nowadays, is kind of a blend of the dinim of nida and zava because you have uncertainties, like we're going to say over here, about when she becomes a nida and when she becomes a zava. So now, de itmar. So because we have a discussion, asiri. What about if she bleeds on the 10th day of those 11 days? Now, you think about it, if, on the 10th day, so you have the maximum there could be doing Yemei Ziva is 10 and 11. 12 for, the 12th day is not Yemei Ziva anymore. It's back to Yemei Nida. So in other words, if she bleeds on the 10th, there's no possibility of her being a Zava Gdola, because even 3 days in succession is not going to all be in Yemei Ziva. So the question is the
one.
Yeah, so now Asiri, Rabbi Yochanan Omer Asiri Kachi, Rabbi Yochanan holds the 10th day is like the 9th day, meaning that if she bleeds on that day, she would still be considered, she still needs to be Shemeres Yom Keneged Yom, because Rabbi Yochanan says it is possible that what would happen if she has bleeding on the 10th, on the 9th, so for sure if she had on the 9th, there's no question, she can have on the 9th, 10th, and 11th, and then she would become a Zavak Dola and need 7 clean days. So Rabbi Yochanan says, even if the bleeding was on the 10th for the first time, so then the same thing, even though you can only have, it's never possible for it to be 10, 11, and 12, because 12 is already Yemei Nida again, nevertheless, Rabbi Yochanan says she still has to be Shemeres Yom Keneged Yom, she still has to, on the 11th, check whether there's any bleeding, and if everything's fine, then she'll go to the mikveh and she's mutter. If not, then Rabbi Yochanan holds, she needs another clean day.
One clean day, not 7.
Right. Because it hasn't been 3 yet. V'Reb Shimon, Reb Lakish Omer, Asiri Ka'achadoser, Rish Lakish says the 10th would be like the 11th. Namely, Reb Yochanan Omer Asiri Kachi means he says, Machi Boy Shimur, the same way there's no question if she bled on the 9th, she would need to watch on the 10th day and make sure that she remains Tahor, otherwise she's still Tomei and also to her husband. So therefore, Reb Yochanan says, Af Asiri Boy Shimur, the same way when it happens on the 10th, even though there's no way that there could be 3 days in succession in Yemei Ziva. He says the same way as if she bled on the 11th, she wouldn't need to be a Shemeres Yom Keneged Yom, because you can't. She, by definition, she can't be a Zava Gdola at that point, because at this point, the Yemei Ziva are over, and the Yemei Nida are beginning again. If she bleeds on the next day, she's going to be a Nida. She's not going to be a Zava. So therefore, to begin with, she doesn't have to check on the 12th day whether she's Tahor, because in any case, that's the Yemei Nida.
Could only be a Zava Gdola in the
within the 11 days, right. Right. So he says the same way Afasiri, like Boy Shimur, the same way if she bled on the 10th, she wouldn't need Shimur either. So she would just tovel that night, and that's it. So now this is something that involves Kores, because of course Nida and Zava, there's Kores. So now there could be an argument in that. So that's what we mean. Dover Zahalocha. So we're saying this is Halocha L'Moshe Misinai, the fact that there's 11 days over there, and therefore, so now they're arguing about that. Then he'd be a Zokin Mamre. Next, Rav Papa continues, Mishpat Zehadin. When we said the word Mishpat refers to din, meaning we said dinim mominus. So that means din bitoy manu sosoy. So no, actually we said before din means something that was learned with the Yud Gimel Midas Shatur and Nedreshes Behem. So what's an example where they would be arguing on something that is learned from the Yud Gimel Midas? Is, for example, they're arguing about whether a daughter from an anusa is also to him. Namely, if he, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, as we learned at the beginning of the 9th Perek, if a man marries a woman, then her daughter, it says clearly in the Psukim, is also to him, is an erva to him. Ervas isha uvita lo isagala. But what happened? No. Hold on. We said there, the Pasuk clearly says that if he marries a woman, then her daughter is also to him, is an erva to him. That clearly says in the Psukim, you don't need any Yud Gimel Midas to dash in that. But what we're talking about over here, let's say he had relations with a woman, and they never got married, and they had a daughter. Is that daughter an erva to him or not? It never actually says so in so many words in the pasuk. And Amar Rava, as we learned there on Daf Ayin Vav, Amar Rava, Amali Rav Yitzchak Bar Avadimi, Asya Hena Hema Hena Asya Zima Zima. We have a Gzera Shava, double Gzera Shava on the words Hena between. Where it talks about a person's granddaughters being an erva to him, ki avos chahena, and by marrying a woman and her, by having relations, by marrying a woman and her daughter or her granddaughter, it says over there also, shara hena zimahi. So we see from the word hena, we learn that just like over there with his wife, it includes her daughter as well as her grandchildren, as well as her granddaughters, they're both an erva to him. The same way with him himself, his own daughter is an erva to him, even if he was never married to her mother. And asya zima zima, and then we learn the Gzeira Shava of Zima, which tells us that in both cases, then in both cases there would be Misas Beis Din, there would be Sreifa. So therefore, so now if the Zokin Mamre and the Chachamim of the Sanhedrin Gdolah are arguing about that, should we accept that Gzeira Shava or not? Then you have a machlokas of something that involves Kores, because again, whichever one, if one of them is being matur and the other one is asterin, then you have a case of Kores over here. So Tosfos points out, by the way, that with all the other ones, the Gemara is bringing an example where you have an actual machloikas tanoim on this, and therefore conceivably the Zokin Mamre and the Sanhedrin could have an argument. Here we don't find anybody is arguing with this Gzeira Shava. Rava is bringing this as this double Gzeira Shava. Nobody's actually arguing with it. But the point is, in other words, that the point is exactly that we're talking about. The Zokin Mamre doesn't accept this Gzeira Shava. He didn't have it but Kabbalah from his Rebbeim. He holds that you can't learn this Gzeira Shava. Therefore, he holds there's no source in the Torah to say that man who saw should be also to him, and therefore he's being mocked with something which is high of chorus, and they're answering something which is high of chorus. Next. Bein dom ledom, continuing with the braisa from Amud Aleph, we said that they can be arguing about a matter of blood. So the braisa had said bein dam nida dam leida dam zivus, whether we're talking about the blood in connection in this connection is blood of nida or birth or ziva. So what would be that case? So we're going to go through each one of them. Here's examples where we could find a machlokas tanoim about each one of those cases, where again we could be saying that the Zokin Mamre conceivably in his time could be having the same machlokas with the Beis Din of his times. So let's start off. Dam nida b'plugta da Akavya ben Mahalal v'Rabbanan. So an example would be the machlokas that we find in the Mishnah between Akavya ben Mahalal and the Chachamim. So Ditanan, we learn in a Mishnah. Now, the Mishnah mentions over there five shades of blood that are considered dam nida. In principle, only those five shades make a woman nida. Any other shade of red or brown or whatever would not. Nowadays, we don't have the expertise. So in general, any shade of red or brownish red or whatever makes a woman a nida. But this is why even nowadays we go and bring shilas to the Rabbanim, and we ask them, is this one of the colors that's metame her or not? Anyway. So you have this. So now you have that list of five, four types of red plus black. So now dam ha yorik. What about if the blood is yorik? Now yorik, on the face of it, means green. But over here, actually, there's a number of places in Shas where the word yorik seems to mean yellow. And that's preposterous what it means over here. Blood is not green, but the blood could be yellow. So it's more like pussy blood or something. So is that metame? So Akavi ben Mahalal matame. Akavi ben Mahalal holds that such blood is tame, and it would be considered damnida. V'chum matarin, v'chum disagree and say that that's not considered damnida. The Gemara explains in Nida why they're arguing about that, but anyway, the point is that they have that argument. So again, now the Zokin Mamre and the Chachamim could be arguing about that. One of them says, like Akavi ben Mahalalo, and the other one says that not, and therefore that involves something that's Koris, because again, Nida is Chayiv Koris. Now there is the point though. Rashi and Tosfos both mention the point that not only now remember, Tosfos holds the Shitosam that if he's machmir against the Beis Din, then that's not a problem. He doesn't become a Zokin Mamre unless he's makel against them. Now the Rambam holds differently. The Rambam holds regardless machmir or makel. He's disagreeing with them, therefore he's a Zokin Mamre. But according to Rashi and Tosfos, that it has to davka be that he's makel. The point. So now if he holds like a Kaveh ben Mahalala, what's the problem? He's being machmir. Rashi points out the fact is there could come a kula from it. Let's say, for example, that she has one day, she has a let's say, for example, during the 7 Yemei Nida. Now, Minat Torah, the way it works is when she becomes a Nida, she just needs to wait until the end of the 7 days and then she tovels. She doesn't need 7 clean days. That's only for a Zava Gdola. So she started bleeding on Tuesday, for example. According to the original Din Torah, then she has 7 days, and the following week Monday. So then that's it. She goes and toivels that night, Monday night, and then she's mutter to her husband. Even if she was bleeding during the entire 7 days, but it counts only from the beginning of Yemei Nida. So now, what would happen? Say, for example, that she had on Tuesday, there came this yellow blood out. Then on Wednesday, there came red blood. Akavi ben Mahalalel, who holds that yellow is Tomei, he would hold that you start the 7 days from Tuesday. Therefore, the next week, Monday night, she goes to the mikveh, and that's that. Meanwhile, the other Chachamim are going to say, no, the yellow doesn't count for anything. The 7 days begin on Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Therefore, she can only go to the mikveh Tuesday night. So now it comes out. If he holds like a Kaveh ben Mahalalo, then he's arguing with them and being matir something which would be Chayiv Kodesh, because according to him, Monday night, she can already go to the mikveh. And that night, she's mutter to her husband. And meanwhile, according to the Chachamim, she has to wait until Tuesday night. Okay. So that would be an example of that machlekas. Dam leida, what would be an argument involving dam leida, which could lead, which involves something that's chayiv kares? So beplugta de Rav Levi. So that would be, for example, if they're arguing about the machlekas of Rav and Levi on the subject. De itmar. Now we have like this. The Torah tells us that. So the Torah tells us after a woman gave birth, if it was a boy, then she has 7 days of tumah and then 33 days of dam toihar, meaning that even during those 33 days she bleeds from her uterus. Nevertheless, she's still tahor and mutter to her husband. She's not allowed to eat tumah and kodshim or enter the bais hamikdash during that time. Eventually, after 40 days are over from the birth, the 41st day she brings her korbanos and now she's completely tahor. And if it's a girl, the amounts are doubled. It's 14 days of tumah and 66 of yimei tahara.
Those both look different.
That's what we're going to discuss now. But the point is, in other words, now nowadays we don't do that. Now the Rambam writes that even in his times in France they still followed that din and they would hold that there are days of dam toyar. In the Rambam writes that in his times, most Sfaradish countries, they already said that it's also as a chumrah. Later on, that chumrah was accepted by Ashkenazim as well, and now it's universal that we don't hold of the concept of, now we don't hold of, it's in the Torah, but we don't follow and practice the concept of dam toyar. Any bleeding that a woman has from her uterus makes her also to her husband, even during those days. Anyway, so now the question is like this, the itmar. So we have a discussion that's relevant to this. The question is, in other words, now, let's take for example that she gave birth to a girl. So therefore, she has 14 days of tumah. Now, those 14 days of tumah apply whether there's bleeding during that time or not. She gives birth to a girl, automatically 14 days of tumah begin. And then again, after that, you have 66 days of Yimei Tahara. Now, what would happen if she was bleeding sometime during that 2 weeks, sometime during those 14 days, and then it continued without interruption into the 66 days? Is that bleeding during those 66 days then, that's a continuation of the previous one, is that called Dam Toihar or not? So that would be the Machlokes. Rav Amar Mayan Echad Hu. Rav says, look, it's basically one source of blood. It all comes from the same place in the uterus. But the Torah says that it's Tahar. Meaning, in other words, Rav says we don't care about the fact that it's a continuation of the same. The Torah says that it's Tomei during certain days, but it says that it's Tahar during other days. Meaning, in other words, Rav says it's a Gzeres HaKosev. That's how it is. So, in other words, So again, she was bleeding, let's say she was bleeding on the 14th day and then continuously into the 15th day. Rav says, nevertheless, any bleeding that starts on the, any bleeding from the 15th and onward is still going to be dam toyar. It's a continuation of the same bleeding from the 14th, and it's obviously a continuation of it. Doesn't matter, Rav says, as soon as the 14 days are up, that's it. Gzeres HaKosev, that now it's dam toyar. Levi says no. Shnei Mayonis Hain. There's two different sources of blood. Nistama Tomei Niftach Tahor. When the Tomei one is open, when the Tomei one closes up, then the Tahor one opens. Nistama Tahor Niftach Tomei. And when the Tahor one is closed, then the Tomei one opens up. Meaning, according to Levi, in the case that we're talking about, she would still be Tomei with the Tumah of a Yeledes. It's after 14 days, but she's bled continuously from during the 14 days into the 15th or later, and therefore Levi says, when that bleeding stops, then yeah, then she can go to the mikveh and she's mutter to her husband. But then if she starts bleeding after that, during the remainder of the 66 days, fine, that's dam toihar, not a problem. But he says if it was continuous from within the 14 days to after, you can't say, he doesn't say it's not Shnei Mayonis. He says it's not Mayon Echad, it's Shnei Mayonis. And obviously the Mayon, the fountain of Tomei blood, is still open because it's bleeding continuously.
It's a fact, yes or no?
You start looking in the womb. Obviously, I mean, all the blood comes from the womb. But the question is it, you know, are there different blood vessels involved after later, whatever? The point is that they have this argument. You can't go and start doing anatomy dissections and decide halacha that way, right? Anyway, so there you have a machlokas. So now again, let's say, so now Suppose that happened. So again, Rav would hold that she's mutter to her husband. It's still continuously bleeding, and she hasn't been to the mikveh in between. Doesn't matter. Levi says that there has to be a break in the bleeding. So now, if the zokin and the basin were to argue about this point, where then you have the question: is she mutter to her husband, or is she also? And there's a chiyuv karis because Yoledes has in that regard the same din as a nida. So again, the point would be, in other words, that so there you have so again the Zokin Mamre and the Rabbanon. So again, Rashi points out whether you're talking about that the other Chachamim hold like Rav and he holds like Levi. Then you have after you made Toyah. So there's going to be the question So the question would be basically, when do the Yemei Toyah begin and when do they end? So you're going to have a machlokas, therefore, which is going to lead one way or the other to him being matir something which is chayev kares, and them asering or therefore that would be enough to make him a zaken mamre. Next. Dam ziva, where would there be a machlokas about dam ziva that would result in something which is chayev kares or not? Beplugta de Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. There you have, for example, the machlokas of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, which we find that's relevant to this. Ditnan, we learn in another Mishnah in Nida. Now, again, so you have this matter that 3 days in a row of bleeding makes her a Zavag Dola, but then in addition, you also have another din. Now Rashi brings from the Gemara in Nida over there, when do we say that she becomes a Zavag Dola, when there's 3 continuous days of bleeding? It's only if it's Machmas Atzma. There's no baby that she's about to give birth to, which is causing the bleeding. When a woman starts going into labor, she starts bleeding from her uterus. So now, if she has 3 days in a row of that, it's called Dam Koshi, it's called blood of hard labor. That doesn't make her a Zavag Dola. That part everybody agrees to. But now, what happens? Kishsa Shloisha Yomim B'Seich Achados Yoyim. If she has this Dam Kishui for 3 days in a row during the 11 days of Zava, Im Shofsa Me'Esles. If then things calm down and the bleeding stops for a 24-hour period, the Yolda, and then she gives birth, Harezi Yoledes B'Zoyv. Then we consider that it's considered that she was a Zava when she gave birth. The implications of that being basically that she's going to have to be tohor. She's going to need 7 clean days without any bleeding before she'll be able to toivel and be mutter to her husband. In other words, again, unlike the regular case of a yoledes without bezoiv means that after 7 or after 14 days, boy or girl respectively, she toivels and she's mutter to her husband. Again, like we said before, according to Rav, it doesn't even matter if there's no break in the bleeding after the 7 or 14 days, and according to Levi, there has to be a break, but not necessarily 7 days. When she's yoledes bezoiv, you require that at some point there's a 7-day break with no bleeding at all, and only then can she be tohor from her ziva, and then we can start Yemei Toyah. Then we can continue with Yemei Toyah. So now, so again, here where she had 3 days in a row of bleeding. Now, if right after that the birth happened, then we say it's machmas dover acher. Then we say it's not just something that happened on its own. It happened because of the impending birth. Therefore, everybody agrees that wouldn't make her a zava. It just means that it's all leading up to the birth. But now, where there was a 24-hour period with no bleeding, then Rabbi Eliezer holds that's enough to make. It means, it turns out, in retrospect, that those 3 days were not because of the birth, but rather that it makes her a Zavag Dola, and now she's Yoledes B'Zoiv.
It does make her
Yeah. The point is, if there's bleeding because of the birth, then that wouldn't make her a Zavag. But when the bleeding, when it stopped for 24 hours, according to Rabbi Eliezer, and then she gave birth, then that means that we see that bleeding wasn't because of the birth, because why did it stop? So therefore, now it means she was bleeding because she was a Zava. Separately than that, then she gave birth. So now she's going
to... Can you come with Zava when you're giving birth?
That's the thing. If the bleeding is only during the giving birth or immediately leading into it, then that doesn't make her a Zava. That's the point. That makes her a Yeledes. Yeah. But here we're talking about there was 3 days in a row of bleeding and then 24 hours of nothing. And then the birth, then Rabbi Eliezer says now she became a Zava from those 3 days, a Zava Gdola, and now separately you have Tumas Yeledes. So the din of Tumas Yeledes, fine, she's going to have her regular 7 plus 33 or 14 plus 66 days. But the difference is because there's also Ziva involved, there needs to be sometime during that period, there needs to be 7 days without any bleeding, and only then will there be Yemei Toyah. Only then do we have the Tara of the 33 or 66 days of Yemei Toyah.
Basically, you could be a Zava even though you didn't give birth yet.
That's the point. Well, no, if she didn't give birth yet, that's obviously she's going to be a Zava, right? The point is that even after the birth, she still needs to take care. She still needs to have the 7 clean days for the Ziva in order to be Toyah. Yeah. So that's according to Rabbi Eliezer. And that Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Laila V'yom, Rabbi Yeshua says it doesn't, not any 24 hours, has to be dafka night and a day, Kalele Shabbos V'yom, like a Friday night and a Friday day. Meaning, in other words, you shouldn't think that it means that, so in other words, it can't be day and then night. It always, in halacha, almost always we say, so according to Rabbi Yeshua, in order for her to be considered, it has to be that the break in the bleeding between the three days of bleeding and the birth was a night followed by a day. Like we talk about, like, for example, from the beginning of Shabbos to the end of Shabbos. According to him, if let's say, for example, she had the 3 days of bleeding and it ended, let's say, during the night, let's say in the middle of Friday night it ended, and then you have 24 hours until Matzah Shabbos, Rabbi Yeshua says that still wouldn't make her Yeledes Bezoiv, because he would still consider only if you had a break of a night followed by a day, only that doesn't mean that it's Yeledes Bezoiv.
A night
followed by a day. Friday, the whole Friday night plus the whole Shabbos day. Let's say the bleeding stopped, let's say 10 o'clock at night on Friday night.
Oh.
So then as Rabbi Yeshua would say, that's not considered Yeledes Bezoiv. The Mishnah continues. Sheshofs menatzar in both those cases. Actually, sorry, I said it wrong before. Sheshofs menatzar in both those cases means that the labor pain stopped. V'loy menadam doesn't necessarily mean that the bleeding stopped. It could have been bleeding continuously even after that, going into the birth. But the point is the labor pain. So I said it wrongly before. So we're talking about the labor pain stopped. Now again, if the bleeding was because of the impending birth, then the labor pains should be continuing all that time. The fact that it's not means that it's yeledes bezoiv. So again, according to Rabbi Yazir, any time you have a 24-hour break in the pains, then it makes her a yeledes bezoiv. And according to Rabbi Yeshua, only if that 24 hours was a night followed by a day. So now if the Zokin and the Chachamim are arguing on this machloikas and saying, therefore, so you had, for example, that she had, let's say, she had a 24-hour break in the pains from 10 o'clock Friday night to 10 o'clock Matzah Shabbos, which is not Leila Shabbos V'yomai, would she be considered a Yeledes Bezoiv or not? That affects the question whether you need 7 clean days or not. So therefore, so again, you have the case where it involves something where Kores is involved, yeah. Next. Bain din ladin, we said they can be arguing about it in between din and din, means in dinim mominus. I mean, dinim mominus, dinim nefoshes, dinim makus. So let's go through those one by one and see what are the cases where they could be arguing on something that leads to kores. So bein dinim mominus, dinim nefashis, dinim makas. Dinim mominus would be, for example, but plugged to the shmur of Rabba Bohu. You could have the zokin mamre and the beistin and the Sanhedrin gedola can be arguing in the same machlokas that Shmuel and Rabba Bohu had in their time. Namely, the Amos Shmuel, we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, shnayim shadonu, if two dayanim judge a din torah, dinehem din, then their din torah is a valid din torah. Alashinikloin, based in chutz, if they're called a chutz b'dika beistin. But nevertheless, what they decided is valid, and the money that they made Reuven pay Shimon or whatever is considered a valid payment. Where's Rabba Bohu says, according to everybody, their din is not a valid din, meaning, in other words, that the money is not considered validly to belong to the person that the Beis Din assigned it to, it would be considered stealing. So now, what happens if Shimon, now having gotten this money based on this psak of this two-member beistin, goes in and makadosh a woman with it, according to Rabba Bohu, then there's no kiddushin, the money doesn't belong to him. According to Shmuel, you have valid kiddushin. Kiddushin eventually becomes something that's chayav kares, because if she's an Eish HaSish now or not, so that would be, they're arguing about such a case which can lead to something which is chayav kares. Next, dinin nefoshes, be plugged to the Rebbe v'Rabbanan. Where do we see there can be an argument in dinin nefoshes that would affect something involving that would involve kores? So there you have it in dinin nefoshes. So be plugged to the Rebbe v'Rabbanan. For example, you have the machlokes of Rebbe and the Rabbanan, which we had before. We had in an earlier in our Masechta about the case niskaven larik zev horik zev. You have the case where a person intended to kill Reuven and by accident he killed Shimon. Is he chayav misa or not? So Rebbe Omer, the Pasuk says about, the Pasuk describes, you have the case where two people are fighting and one of them hits a pregnant woman, v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh, and causes her to die. So the Pasuk is, v'nasata nefesh tachas nefesh, you should do a soul instead of a soul. So what does that mean? So plugged it. The Rebbe even Rabbanan. The Tanya Rebbe Omer when a satan nefesh tachas nefesh means mamon, means not that he's chayev misa, means that he has to pay for the value of her life. Ata Omer mamon, you're saying it means mamon elam nefesh mamish. Maybe it means that he actually is executed. No, nemena sinu lamaylo and nemena sinu lamata. Because you have two different psukim over there that mention Nesina. Here you have the Nosan Beflilim, which refers to the case where she miscarried and he pays for Dmei Vlodis. There, for sure, there's no Chiyuv Misa. It's because it was only a miscarriage and she herself survived it. Therefore, he only pays money and everybody agrees to that. Therefore, Rebbe says also, when it says, when a Sata Nefesh Tachas Nefesh, also means to pay Momen and not that you actually execute him. Whereas the Chachamim disagree with him and say that he would be chayiv misa. So now if Beis Din and the Zok and Mamre disagree on this point, so one of them holds that he's chayiv to pay money, and the other one holds he's chayiv misa. Well, according to Rebbe, that he's chayiv to pay money means he pays the money to her Yoshim. Again, that money they can use for kedushin. According to the Chacham, they can't because they have no business getting money. There you go, to something that's chayiv karis. Next, Dine Malkus, what would be an example where they're arguing about something involving Malkus? Beplugged to Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbanan, they could be arguing, for example, about the same machloikas that Rabbi Shmuel and the Rabbanan had later on. That's not Malkus Begimel at the beginning of our Masechta. We said Malkus requires a basin of three. And they said in the name of Rabbi Shmuel that you need 23. So now if a basin of three gave a person Malkus, according to Rabbi Shmuel, they had no business giving him Malkus. Therefore, they have to pay him money for the injury. They were choyvo b'chaveira. They injured him for no good reason. Now they have to pay him nezek and sire and so forth. And he could take that money and be mekadesh with it. Whereas according to the Chachamim, it was fine for them to give him Malkus. So they don't have to pay him anything. They had to give him Malkus. So therefore, so you have, again, a machloikus involving a din of Malkus that leads to something which is chayiv karis.
What, you have cars for giving Malkus?
No. According to Rabbi Shmuel, this Beis Din of three was not allowed to give him Malkus. Therefore, if they did give him Malkus, they now are chayev to pay him money. And that money belongs to him, which he could now be Makadish a woman with. And then being Makadish a woman means that now there's Kores if she's Mizana.
And if he deserved to get the Malkus, then...
Not everybody agrees he deserved to get the Malkus. The question is whether a Beis Din of this size is able to administer Malkus. According to Rabbi Shmuel, no. You need a Beis Din of 23 to administer Malkus. Any less than that, they're not allowed to, even if the guy is unquestionably guilty. According to the Chacham, a Beis Din of three is enough for that.
So how does it make the money... good or not good?
Okay, so let's review. This guy, let's say, for example, he took an ox and muzzled it while it was threshing the grain. No question, he's chayiv malchus. Where Adam come and say, we warned him, don't do that, you're gonna be chayiv malchus. He said, I'm gonna do it anyway, and he now is chayiv malchus. The case comes in front of a Beis Din of three. Can a Beis Din of three administer malchus? According to the Chachamim, yes. According to the Bishmal, no. So now, let's say they gave him Malkus. Now what happens afterwards? According to the Chachamim, that's it. They did the right thing. They gave him Malkus. There's no monetary payment involved. According to Rabbi Shmuel is going to say, no, we're going to go to that Beis Din and say, look, you're a Beis Din of three. You're not a Beis Din of 23. What are you giving this guy Malkus for? You have to get together a Beis Din of 23 for the purpose. Therefore, you hit him without a valid reason. Therefore, you are chayiv money to him. Yes, he's going to be chayiv Malkus. That Malkus is going to have to be taken care of in a bigger Beis Din. Right now, you guys hit him for no good reason, and therefore, you're chayiv to pay him, like any case where a person hits and injures somebody else.
Takes this money as a mekadesh.
Now, if he takes that money that he got, according to Rabbi Shmuel, and is Makadish a woman with it, is it valid Kedushin? According to Rabbi Shmuel, yes. According to the Chachamim, they had no need to pay him in the first place. They gave him valid Malkus.
They also take extra money from him. You say it's money that's...
No, because they had no... He has to return. They thought they have to give it to him because they're chayiv to pay him as Choyv B'Chaveira. It turns out, according to the Chachamim, it turns out that not. So now, if the Zokin holds... So let's say, for example, the Zokin holds... That you need a Beis Din of 23 for the purpose. Therefore, he says, in other words, this money was validly given to her, and now there's the other way around. Let's say the Zokin holds you need a Beis Din of only three. Therefore, he says, now when they come to Beis Din to ask, does that original Beis Din of three have to pay him? And the Zokin says, no, they don't have to pay him. Any money that he received for that, he has to reimburse them. Then it means this Zokin is also implicitly saying, and if he were to take that money and be Makadish a woman, nothing happens. It's not a valid Kedushin because it's not his money to give. So therefore, he's mekel in something which is chayiv kares, because he's saying this woman is not an eishes ish. Meanwhile, the other chachamim are saying that it is a valid payment and it does belong to him, and he's able to be mekadesh with it, and therefore there's an issur kares involved over here. So that's the point. In other words, it doesn't have to be the whole point we're making in this sugya over here. It doesn't have to be that the machlokas between them is that the thing itself involves kores, like we said before about nida and ziva and all of that. It's something which leads to something else, which leads to something else, and eventually results in something which could be chayiv kores, right? So that would be an example. Then we said ben nega la nega. We said between one nega and another. So we said that means ben nega odim, nega batim, nega begodim. For example, there's machlokas regarding the goyim of people or of houses or begodim. So let's go through each one of those and see where there could be a machlokas that results in something that's chayiv kares. So nega odim, beplugta de Rabbi Yeshua of Rabbanon. For example, they're arguing about the same machlokas that Rabbi Yeshua and the Chachamim did in a Mishnah. The Tanan, im baheres kodim laseir alavon, if the white spot came before the white hair, and we know that white hair in Tzaraas is a simen truma, Tomei, then he's Tomei, no question about it. But if the white hair was there before the Tzaraas, Tahar, then he's Tahar. Suffolk, what happens if we're not sure which is first? Tomei, Rabbi Yeshua im Keha. So he's Tomei, says the Tanakhama, but Rabbi Yeshua says Keha. Now my Keha, I'm a Rabbi Keha Tahar. It means Rabbi Yeshua is saying it's as though it darkened in color, meaning in other words that therefore he's Tahar. So in other words, he's saying that it's not considered saras. So now if this person now goes into the Bais Mikdash, is he going to be chayiv kores or not? According to the Chachamim, he's tomei, therefore he's chayiv kores. According to Rabbi Yeshua, he's not tomei, therefore he'd be potter from kores. So there you have directly something which involves kores. Now Tosfos points out that no, because this is not something which would be chayiv chatos if he did it b'shogeg. Instead, a tomei who goes into the Bais Mikdash b'shogeg brings a different kind of korban called a korban ol v'yodid. So therefore, Tosfos rather says we're talking about, let's say, for example, where he now touches bread or other food of truma. Did he make a tomei or not? So that's going to affect the question: is there going to be kores involved? He touched bread of truma. Eating truma itself would only be misa b'dei shemayim, but here we're talking about now again. The kohen took that loaf of bread and was makadish a woman with it. Well, is it worth anything? Is it worth a shava pruta? So, or not. So now you have, in other words, again, because this Zokin Mamre held that the person is Tahar, therefore he holds this bread is not Tomei, therefore he holds that the person who went into the Kohen who took this bread and was Makadish a woman with it, it is valid Kiddushin, and therefore there's Kores involved. Whereas the other Chachamim disagree and say that it's not. So again, you have an example where the Machlokas between them leads to something which is Chayiv Kores. We'll continue on Matzah Shabbos, Be'ez Hashem, because it's getting late. But we're going to continue going through again. This is all part of Rabbi Papa explaining the Braisa blow by blow and explaining how every single case in the Braisa eventually leads to something which is Chayiv Kores or Chatos, and therefore that can make a Mazak and Mamre according to the Meir.
All this explained outside the Beis Medrash.
This was all explained, right? He's all explaining to the Hunabachin and outside the Beis Medrash how to understand this Braisa.
Do one example, two, you
have to do a bunch. You have to go through every example to show how again, even where it's very far fetched, we're talking, let's say, according to Tosfos with this last case, he touched a loaf. It's a question whether he's Tomei as a Metzora or not, and then he touched a loaf of bread, and then the Kohen was Makadish a woman with this loaf of bread, and then somebody is Mizana with this woman, which involves Kores. So, nevertheless, it doesn't matter how long the chain is, as long as it leads to something which is Kores and Chatos, then Rameyu is going to hold that he can be considered a Zokin Mamre.